accession number 9552, reel 8.
Mr. Basil Farrow, Reel 8. Could you tell me how you came to leave the Royal Army Medical Corps?
Well, it's, you might say it's like a moth drawn to an electric light bulb, or youthful enthusiasm, not yet dampened, which it eventually was, of course. It was at Corby that I made the application, whilst we were at Corby, to be retransferred back to my old regiment. As I had previously mentioned, I think it must I must have still have had in mind the encounter at Ypres of the Yorks. But I just wanted to get back to the regiment. So I made application, and in case they thought my application had in view perhaps transfer to England to be trained, I did make a point of mentioning in my application that I'd already served 6 months at the Depot Richmond and was fully trained infantryman, and mentioned the regiment to which. And the application went, and it takes time. It eventually came, and to go right back, came, and I found myself posted back to, posted or sent back to Le Havre, to the camp there, at a place called Honfleur.
What did your friends in the Royal Army Medical Corps think of this decision of yours?
I really don't have no recollection whether they thought anything at all. I don't know whether I spoke to them about it. I don't know.
You said you felt drawn like a moth to the flame. Well, what was it about? Can you analyse why you were drawn?
No, I failed to understand it. It was you couldn't say it was a stupid thing to do, but it was an unheard of thing to do, as I'll relate to you as we get along. I don't know, an impulse, and total ignorance of the real conditions in the front line. I'd been With the field ambulance, we were near, could be under rifle fire, under machine gun fire, under shell fire. But I had no experience of a frontline soldier. So I was totally in ignorance of what I was applying for. Just wanted to get back to the regiment. Had I known the real conditions, I might have hesitated the conditions which, when I eventually found them.
Were you unhappy at all?
No, I was no. It was just on impulse.
So you were perfectly happy in every other respect with your with the 13th
Field. Yes, it
just
suddenly struck me. I think possibly a bit bored. We were there at Corby, I don't know how long. It seemed a week or so, perhaps it wasn't. But I was suddenly bored and wanted to be in the front line, I don't know.
What month did you leave the 13th?
That again, I couldn't say, but it would be in the autumn, I think. It would be in the autumn. Because when I was sent back to Le Havre to be re-kitted as an infantryman at this camp at Honfleur, and of course they didn't send single men to battalions in single, they waited for two, three or four reinforcements to battalions. Because this was a base camp where people arriving from England or out of hospital were for a temporary, and incidentally whilst there the condition was such, I'm speaking now from other soldiers' experience, was so rough that one wanted to get back to the front line. You may have heard of things called the bull ring. In fact, at Etap there was a mutiny there, but at Arb the routine was daily. One day in the bull ring, That is where you were drilled and drilled and drilled and on the range firing live ammunition, grenades. The next day, you were sent down to La Havre to the docks and working as stevedores. And you alternated like that. One day down at stevedore and down at the dockside, unloading the stores as they came in. The next day, bullring.
Could I ask you about this? These days' training, firstly? How had things changed since 1913, when you'd been trained? For instance, this bombs would be new to you, I presume.
That was the only difference. The Mills bomb then had come into... because the primitive bombs, which I heard, used on the Marne by our troops, they used to fill empty jam tins, fill them with stuff, with a fuse, and throw them over, and the fuse not properly... Jellies would throw them back. Then, of course, the Mills bomb came out, and that was an ideal thing. And they were in use when I arrived down at La Havre.
What training were you given in them?
Well, just in a trench and throwing them as far as you could. And, of course, how to handle them, because once a Mills bomb, the detonator's in, or it's already detonated, there's a spring and there's a pin. Once you pull that pin out, your thumb's on the spring. If you let go, within 5 seconds, it explodes. Sometimes even as short as 4 seconds. So you pulled out the pin, arm backwards, and as you were in a trench, throwing from a trench, you would lob it as far as you could. And we had training in that, how far you could throw a Mills bomb.
Were they live bombs you trained with?
Really, no, I can't say. They could have been. I don't remember whether they were or not. On the rifle range, we fired with the live ammunition, yes. On the rifle range. Now, with Mills bombs, I don't remember that they were. That we actually pulled the pin out. In fact, you could, if as long as the detonator was put in at the other end, as long as no detonator, you could sling a Mills bomb, it was harmless.
What about rifle, training?
And then we'd have the rifle drill and dummies up and bayonet charging and things like that. And really...
Had you maintained your competence, both in bayonet and rifle?
Oh, yes.
Shooting?
Yes.
Did you... you'd been a fairly crack shot,
yes,
before the war in 1913.
Yes.
Did this... And that was in the regular army, you were a noticeably,
yes,
good shot.
Yes.
Did you therefore stand out at all amongst the people who were there in 1915?
Well, down at the base, they weren't looking out for anything like that. They were just there to put you through it. And
you didn't have
this was the opinion, I think, of lots of the ordinary troops down at the base. The NCOs who put you through it, they were on a safe job, and they felt that the more they put you through it, the safer their job was. In other words, it's a bad comparison, much like a warder's, really. They were pretty tough, and they were tough purposely to keep their job at the base.
What did you think of them?
We didn't think much of them. And, of course, in those days, there was no NAFI, there were canteens, there was entertainment, and I do remember we had the... in the Second World War, we had all the artists going out to entertain.
ENSA,
of course, that didn't exist in the First World War. We had concert parties, but they were all soldiers themselves. And I remember seeing one, and I thought it was a girl. She sang. She sang so well, and she danced, and I was astonished. When at the end of the performance, she pulled up and it was a man. Anyhow. At Havre, there was one famous, very good, Lina Ashwell's concert party. She was well known at Havre, and I attended one of those. There was in the evening.
What sort of show would they put on? What sort of acts?
Like musical acts and singing.
Was it mainly, was it patriotic material, or was it just normal music?
Not so much patriotic, because the soldiers were inclined to... early on, but eventually, particularly particularly after, well, even before the Somme, the soldiers got a little bit about all patriotic songs. We had our own songs, one of which, now one in particular, I'm trying to think of it. I want to go home. I don't want to go in the trenches no more. Take me over the sea, where the animal can't get at me. Oh my, I don't want to die. I want to go home. That was the kind of song we'd sing on the march. I mean, we'd come a little cynical.
Can you remember any others that you used to sing?
Oh, yes, there were lots of others.
Can you sing any for us?
Well, there was one which the OC would stop us. And I've forgotten where it was. The medical officer was captured. Jerry's attacked and the medical post was overrun and he was captured. I've forgotten his name. And we'd composed a song, marching song. Hey, oh, poor old number nine. Hey, oh, poor old number nine. Hey, oh. Oh, down in the quarries, down in the quarries. And they left old number nine down in the quarries. And the stretcher bearers helped to do him in. Hey, and we'd sing that marching along, we'd sing. And of course, some ribald songs.
Was that with the Yorks or with
the Yorks? That was purely a Yorkshire local thing, but then the OC stopped us. And strange to say, that it was during the Somme, between battles, the OC turned up. He'd been repatriated as a non-combatant.
The medical officer.
Yes, the medical officer. We used to call him number nine, because whatever ailment you had, it was always a number nine. That was a purge, you know. That's why we christened him number nine. But his brother, his younger brother, had joined the regiment. And we thought it was sort of to avenge his elder brother, his younger brother, as an infantryman. But he came back to France and was with another unit, and as he knew the Yorks from here, he came and visited us. And he was replaced by a medical officer, RMC medical officer, whom we christened. I forgot whether it was Rigaldo or... But anyhow, there was a chap in the Olympics before the war was won by a fellow of the name of Rigaldo or Ribaldo or some name like that. And we christened our OC that because he used... Out of the line, we used to do exercises and physical jerks and all that. And our medical officer used to take the stretcher bearers and used to take us for runs. So we christened him after this Olympic runner. And it was an Olympic runner, famous. He came in first in the marathon. And during the last 20 yards, the Italians were enthusiastic, it was an Italian, grabbed him and helped him along, and he was disqualified. The last 20 yards he'd had help. I think it was Rimaldo, some name like that. I've forgotten the name exactly.
Well, while you were training at Honfleur in the bullring there, were you introduced to trenches and how to, you know, maintain and build them?
No. Not whilst I was there, anyhow.
How about gas? Were you given any gas drill?
No, I don't remember. We would be sort of, when we were practicing charging, have a gas mask on, do the exercises with a gas mask, but the gas masks in those days are not like those eventually used. They were fairly funny looking things. You may have seen the models of them.
So, as you said before, training hadn't progressed a great deal since 1913 in Europe.
Because it was the infantry soldier, it was always rifle and bayonet. And then, of course, when bombs did arrive, we had a bomber, or two bombers per company. In fact, Corporal Anderson, he was the bomber.
We'll come to that when we get you into the battalion, yes.
I never knew him. He won his VC before I arrived with the battalion. I think it was at Festubert. I was told, as they were attacking, the officer said, come along, Anderson. Well, he said, I'll be there when I'm wanted. And he was seen going along. He was the only one with bombs, with his bag of bombs, and he cleared the old German trenches, and we never saw, we never found again. He was awarded the VC posthumously. Anyhow, then when the Somme offensive came along, they were all issued with bombs. We all had two bombs each. Not the stretcher bearers, but the chaps, the fighting fellows with the rifles. They all had two bombs each. And at the beginning, they were a bit scared of them.
Yeah, we'll come to that, because I'm going to ask you about the bombing later. Was there any other sort of training you did whilst you were there that you can remember?
No.
How long was this training for?
Oh, just the time. You could be there a few days or a week or a fortnight, but not very, very long. Not very, very long. I was there. I honestly don't remember how long it might have been. I might have been down there a fortnight.
What about the stevedoring? What was that like?
Well, that was on the quayside, and we were unloading the stores as they came in, and with NCOs in charge, and making sure that you didn't swing the leg. That's an old swinging the lead, you know. In other words, dodging the column. We kept you at it, and we're just walking on board and carrying parcels and stocking them on the quayside. And we used to go down to Havre by a train. Not a train, a tram. It was some distance. I mean, it was a bit too far to... It wasn't too far to walk if you were just marching there to go on a ship. But to after a day's work, it had been a bit of a walk back to Honfleur. So we used to be taken down on the local trams.
So then that was hard physical graft, was it?
Fairly. We weren't sorry to leave. And I do remember there, I was on guard for the first time before the war, when I was up at Richmond, I did guard duties. But in the RAMC, there was no question of guards and things like that. But there, whilst I was at the camp, I was on guard one night. And it was a 24-hour guard. And it was something entirely new and very eerie experience to be alone there at night time on the perimeter of the camp on guard. And of course the guard is 2 hours on and 4 hours off, you know. That was my first experience of doing guard duty again. And then eventually we were posted up to this place in Wadi, which the corporal had difficulty in pronouncing and couldn't get anywhere. And somehow or other, I had a slight knowledge of a pronunciation of words in French and a small vocabulary already in French. I couldn't speak French, but I had a small vocabulary and I could pronounce it. And I knew I am and you are and things like that.
So, how were you able to help?
Well, the occasion rarely helped, but on that occasion, when we were going to this place called Wazzy, he was asking for Oyezy, and I said, show me the paper. They don't understand how you pronounce it. And when I asked the French person the direction to the Wazzy, I think it's two S's, isn't it? And it's not Wazzy. It's Wazzy. You see, one S would be Wazzy, but two S's, Wazzy. And I knew that. I was like a rolling stone. I certainly gathered moss. I'd had very little education. Obviously, in the army from 15, you could see that I had very little education. But nevertheless, as a rolling stone, I did gather moss, and I retained various things. And I had a slight knowledge of French.
This was while you were making the last bit of the journey. You'd come the rest of the way by train, had you?
We'd come so far by train, yes, from Le Havre. And we'd detrained at some place, I've forgotten where, but the last half dozen miles or so, we'd to go by foot.
What was your reception when you joined the battalion at Wassy?
Well, amongst the men, I don't recollect. But... it must have caused some comment in the officers' mess. It's only a presumption of mine, because The medical officer sent for me. Therefore, my arrival must have caused some comment. A man coming from a non-combatant corps, voluntary, to the infantry. It wasn't the beginning of the war. It was in. I mean, there'd been some nasty battles fought, and conscription wasn't. And it was so obvious. It was voluntary, and the MO sent for me, the medical officer. I said, no, what's your idea? What made you apply for this transfer? Do you actually want to fight? And I remember him saying those words. I said, no, not, that wasn't the reason, but it's my old regiment, and I felt as though I'd like to come back to it. He said, but I'm asking you, do you want to fight? I said, I don't. I said, I wanted to back to the regiment. He said, well, B Company, I've lost a stretcher bearer. He'd become a casualty, you see. Now, you from the RMC are an ideal replacement. Will you take it? Now, if you want to fight, I'll. So I became a regimental stretcher bearer. The difference between a regimental stretcher bearer and an RMC stretcher bearer is this. The RMC has the armband with the Red Cross. Regimental stretcher bearer, there are four per company. That is two stretchers per company, four men per company. He doesn't have the Red Cross. He's still an infantryman. He's not covered by the Geneva Conventions, I mean. And his duties are, he goes over in our regiment at least, and it couldn't be the same in all, because in an attack, the front line is heavily bombarded, obviously. He goes over the top with the regiment and is liable to be shot just like they are, and to the smithereens. All he has on, he does have a brassard, SB, stretcher bearer. That's merely to distinguish him in the regiment itself. And it is one of the most hazardous jobs, inasmuch as in an attack, if those troops that are successful in attaining the objective, they dig in, whereas a stretcher bearer is going backwards and forwards on the top all the time, collecting wounded as they fall, and he carries them to the regimental aid post. That's he gives what help he can, if he can, he's not much, because a wounded man has got a little packet there with a bandage, but he gets him on the stretcher, if he can give the wound is such that he could attend to it, he does. Otherwise, it gets it to the regimental aid post as quickly as possible. And that is so that he's moving on the top all the time, or in the communication trench, that they're full of troops going up or coming down, as the case may be. Because walking wounded, naturally drop down into a trench if there is one, and they get congested. And anyhow, I became, as I say,
It was true then that you didn't really mind whether you fought or not.
No, I hadn't. I just don't know what made me make do what I did. It was a most stupid thing, if you like. Anyhow, I very soon learned that I had jumped out of the frying pan into the fire.
I'll come to that. The other thing I wanted to ask about your reception when you got there was,
amongst the men, I don't recollect any reaction.
But did you notice any changes in the battalion from the sort of troops that you'd been with the 3rd Special Reserve, I think it was?
Yes.
Did you notice any change in the sort of battalion? I mean, I know it's a different battalion, no. But many of them were the same people.
Yeah.
Did you notice whether the battalion was as regular as it had been, or had it been diluted by
the... It had been diluted tremendously by the time, because there were very few of the original left that had been wounded or killed. Incidentally, to refer to stretcher, initially when the troops landed, the stretcher bearers were bandsmen. They were the stretcher bearers. And when I joined the battalion, there wasn't a bandsman left. Therefore, they'd all been either killed or wounded.
Now, were there new people? There
were quite a lot of...
Were they as good as the regulars?
In other words,
did it still
have... It was a regular battalion, and they had the battalion spirit. Oh, yes.
Did they have the old regular skills of for instance, rifle shooting, rate of fire?
Oh, yeah.
How did they maintain them? How did the battalion keep, I mean, why would recruits to a regular battalion gain regular attributes, whereas recruits to another battalion
well,
didn't?
They'd be with the men. A new recruit would probably be taken, I won't say taken under the wing of anything, but he'd keep his eyes open and do as they do. In those days, an infantryman, he didn't require special skills. All he required was guts and to be able to shoot and courage. Well, that's his guts, because the only arm. Now, it's very complicated. Even an infantryman's job. But then it was also, and then of course the bombs came along, and incidentally when they did, and when they were distributed around, the ordinary chap was a bit scared of them, because you had them.
We'll come to that. Yeah. So when you joined the battalion, it was recognisably regular to it.
Yes.
The ethos was the same.
Yes. It was a regular battalion, the 2nd battalion of the Yorkshire Regiment.
Did you actually know anybody?
I didn't. I don't remember knowing anybody that I'd met up at Ypres. No. That I'd met in Richmond, before the war.
You'd been assigned to B Company, you say?
To B Company, yes.
How did you settle in with B Company at Wassey?
Just normally. No, I settled in quite normally. I mean, the conditions open air, living in dugouts, well, I'd experienced that in the 13th Field Ambulance. But the only difference was I was right forward in the front line. And...
Well, this is at Wassey.
No, I mean, Wassey, we were only there a few days during the Christmas period, you know. And
What can you remember about the Christmas celebrations? Did you have any?
I don't remember any celebrations. I don't know whether it was Christmas Day or not, but I found myself on every evening, when we were out in villages like that, there'd be a patrol, a corporal, and 6 men or 4 men go around the estaminets to clear them out. At a certain hour, I think 8 o'clock or whatever. A certain hour, they'd got to be out of estaminets.
And you did that?
That was one of my first duties. That was before I was made a stretcher bearer. But when I was made a stretcher bearer, that was one good thing about we were excused all of the duties out of the line and things like that. We didn't do drills and fatigues.
Just mentioning this estaminet clearing business, how would you go about clearing an estaminet? Was there ever any bother?
Oh, there couldn't be a few drunken chaps, but I don't remember any particular. I do remember one, I wasn't personally involved, but a chappie who had, incidentally, I've not mentioned, there were some regulars. When I say regulars, there must have been, right from the beginning of the battalion, because there was one chap in particular, the regular soldier. His engagement was 7 years with the colours and 5 on the reserve. And in an emergency, he had to do a bakshi year. That made 13 years. And it happened frequently during the first 2 years of the war, before conscription came in, that men were sent out of the front line and discharged. They'd completed their contract. And I'd heard say, and I think even in our regiment, when it was getting really, the chap was within a fortnight or a month of being discharged, the CO would find him a job at regimental quarters and lessen his risk, give him a chance of survival. Well, there was one, I do remember one chappie on this Christmas Eve. He was drunk, very drunk, and going back to billets, he bumped into the Sergeant Major, B Company Sergeant Major, who was a fairly decent fella. I can mention his name because it's on the roll of honour, Sergeant Major Kant. He was killed on the 1st of July. And he was, and the quartermaster, and this chap, being an old soldier, being drunk, he started telling them what he thought of them. And I don't know whether he even assaulted, but the old thing was he was put under arrest Well, of course, when you're put under arrest, you're first tried by your company officer. The company officer referred him to the CO, and he must have been sufficiently aggressive that the CO put him down for a court martial. And a court martial, he got 6 months. Now, up to that time, default people who were punished were sent to the base, the prison at the base, where they were really put through it. Eventually, that was stopped because people would do things. Some soldiers would do things to get out of it and didn't care about them as long as they got out. But at that time, they were sent to the base. Now, this was Christmas time. He'd only 6 months to do